It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go for this sixth day of May, 2020. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you find us live on the interweb tubes. And I'm told we are sending hot, straight, and true to both the White Rose and the Headon.live stream. And yes, tune in as well. So all things are working as they should, we hope. And we hope it stays that way. There's some work going on in the background here at the Horn. Shouldn't affect your listening experience in a negative way, but we've at least I think Brother Deacon Asa has come up with a way to put paid to the confusion that happens when the buffering when Frontier runs under the bed and hides, so that now, if everything works as planned, when Frontier runs under the bed and hides, You'll get a message on the Headon.live stream asking you to please stand by instead of just defaulting to a previous program that as likely as not involves me having a conversation with Scott in San Diego. I don't know how Scott makes that work, but, you know, it just works out that way because, well, yeah, fun. But that should be different now. There are other changes in the works that should mean a great deal of difference to the audio quality of this program. I'm hoping to have that in line and sorted out by the end of this coming weekend. Yes, Steve from Georgistan. I am broadcasting today because today is Wednesday. And I always broadcast on Wednesdays, unless there's some reason that means I have to be away from the microphone. And the same goes for Mondays and Tuesdays and Thursdays and Fridays, from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, or 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All the other daylight times in between, and all the other time zones on either end, all the way around the planet, right there. Mm-hmm. Now, can you get this program anywhere on the planet? Yeah, well, some authoritarian dictatorial regimes may object, but I'm proud to say that we are reaching further and broader than we ever have before. And so if you're listening in another country, drop a note. Let me know where you're listening from. It's just nice to know. It's nice to know where all our community generally, not specifically, but generally is. As noted, though, it is Wednesday, the 6th of May, and we have thanks to extend to our 6th of May PayPal subscribers. That means thanks going out to Michael in Madison, and thanks to Don in West Tennistan, thanks to Kitty in Boston, thanks to Alex, thank you to Chris in Germany, thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, thank you to Kim and Malin in New Jersey, to John, thank you to Bob in North Carolina, and thank you to Lauren on the far Canadian montane frontier. Thank you, one and all. If you'd like to be a member of the few, the happy few, who are subscribers who help keep this program going month in and month out. Well, I heartily welcome it. The whole community does, because we keep this thing going for each other. And just run over to headon.live. The PayPal interface is right there in front of you. If you want to do Patreon, you have to click the Contribute tab. And then every day there's a fundraising goal, and you'll see that on the main page too. Interesting. Oh, goody. Technical problems. Stand by. So let me get a message into the chat room. We're having some trouble with the players. I told you there's some work going on in the background. It would be helpful if I could type. Warlong? No, not Warlong. I wonder if I should just sort of pause for a minute and wait for the go ahead from Brother Deacon Asa. I think I'll do that. Stand by. Now we're recording again. These are all just technical things that Brother Deacon Asa and I have been sorting out, and there's only one way to know if they can withstand the stress of broadcasting, and that is to try it. So now we're back and running. Missed a little bit, but not a whole lot. There's Steve working the word. POTUS has his head up his rectory. I knew. Yes, absolutely. Steve in New York says, interruption, thy name is Frontier. That's broadcastus interruptus. It's a way to keep, it's an old and often ineffective way to keep broadcasts from multiplying. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dave. Yep, frontiered. Working on that too. There's a lot of plans in the works here, and I need to make an announcement too. There've been some issues over at Progressive Voices and with getting Mike's program running. Mike Malloy's program running at 9 p.m. So beginning this evening, pretty sure, the backup stream for Mike Malloy will be here at headon.live and probably eventually at White Rose Society. But for now at headon.live at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and all times in the middle and all times on either end, the Malloy program will come your way right here. So there'll be about an hour of something between 8 and 9 p.m. And then precisely at 9 p.m., the spark will be put to the tinder at the Truth Seeker fire pit, and the dulcet tones of Mike Malloy will emerge from your speakers if you're tuned in to either the Horns tune-in stream or the regular stream that you can get there at headon.live. Okay? Golly Moses. The overnight stream's really never gone anywhere that I'm aware of, Roger. But those are some more of the changes that are in the works. No, Bill Ulrich, Todd from South Carolina, Stan did not frontier us. That was frontiering us. He ran right under the bed. Steve in New York says, I love me some Mike Malloy, but dulcet is not the way I'd characterize his tones. Well, you know, I mean, they can be dulcet. I mean, dulcet is in the ears of the beholder. You say tomato, I say tomato. And now back to what really matters. In a minute. Like I said, back to what really matters, because both John, our buddy Johan in Colorado, as well as Flavio in Wisconsin. Have asked the same question within 24 hours of each other. Namely, where did you get LARPing and smollicking? Flavio says, I've looked high and low, and all I found was live-action role-playing for LARPing and smollick, a Slavic last name. Am I hearing wrong? No, you're not. And it's a local colloquialism. And it has to do with physical contact. For instance, we actually had this conversation once before. You remember back during the 2016 primaries, that one horrifying night? And by the way, just put the knives and forks down in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. It's all over, baby blue. You remember the debate pageant in 2016? Hang on. Anyway, the Republican debates of 2016. And there was that one evening when we all watched in abject horror. And, of course, I'd been referring to Republicans generally as booger eaters for a long time. But there was that one magic evening where my prophetic powers were proven true again as a nice, slippery sinus oyster emerged from the nostril of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, and traveled its way down his upper lip until amphibian-like, frog-like, He flicked his tongue out and grabbed it. Well, in that moment, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, could be said to have LARPed that booger. So I can't help you in terms of, like, in formal definitional terms, such as Noah Webster or Samuel Pepys may have done. No, I'm not. Not Samuel Pepys. Samuel Johnson. But that's certainly a solid example of LARPing. Smollicking. In some instances, smollicking can be said to be kith and kin to canoodling. But no, generally just physical rubbing around kind of contact, and it, and by the way, Brother Deacon Asa Flavio refers you to a podcast called A Way with Words. Asa says there's a lot of this colloquialism talk on that podcast. LARPing and smolicking, Steve in New York says, come from dictionaries that contains Knuten valve, dispensopal, and flageolate. Yes. And most recently, the Roggen sack. Oh, sensitive, that Roggen sack. Worries a lot about regular people. So I hope that that was helpful. And by the way, in the midst of all this madness, the fundraising goal for the evening stands at $399 to catch us up with midweek here on the program. $399, dollar short of, you know, two full. But that means we wiped out all of Monday and a dollar of yesterday, and now we've got today and $199 of yesterday. So that's where the fundraising goal stands. So much stuff. Been on the air for 30 minutes and said next to nothing. That's frustrating. But we're getting things going. Texas T says smolicking refers to smothering without deodorant. Flavio tells Brother Deacon Asa he listens to Away with Words quite often then and sends thanks. I've been awarded a cowbell by Billable Rick for Broadcastus Interruptus. Thank you, Billable. Now, can we please do some radio? Yes, I think so. Being as how it's prayer meeting Wednesday, let's check in with what's going on in the religion industry. Here during this here plague. Thank you, Jeremy in Vermont, for getting us started. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully you'll have some company. Oh, this is just going to be sickening for a while. Sorry. The religion industry never hesitates to take something horrible, something heartbreaking and awful, and try to make it more so. Death is stalking this country with a vicious efficiency. And so it is that in the midst of all of that, well, Velveeta King, the cheesy niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., showed up in an online gathering that had been pulled together by a religious maniac named Frank Amedia. And what they were doing is they were touting a great big humongous religious mania event planned for September 26th on the National Mall in D.C. And they're calling it The Return. Mm-hmm. And so, because Velveeta King, cheesy as she is, can never go more than 5 or 10 seconds without inveighing about the precious little darling little fetuses. She reminded the hardcores and dead enders and hard cases and LARPers and smolickers and head rubbers and avoiders of social distance and spreaders of disease you know, the vermin who turned in, who tuned into that. I use vermin in the sense of something that bears disease. There's no particular ethnic or cultural connotation to it. It's just a fact that they carry disease and they don't care who they spread it to. And so Velveeta King, having heard from Frank Amedia, she wanted to explain why it is that New York has been hit so hard by the Rona. And it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that the vast majority of cases came to New York from Europe. Not Wuhan, but Europe. And by the way, by the time it had gotten to Europe, scientists have now discovered that it had morphed dramatically, the COVID-19 virus, into something nastier and more virulent. But no, it had nothing to do with that, according to Velveeta King. Well, in this case, Steve, in New York, you're wrong, anticipating the story. Steve says, it's the gays, Henry, the gays. No. What she said is, you have to realize Margaret Sanger was from New York. Yeah, 100 years ago. She was the founder of all this atrocity. She ushered it in this generation. She's been dead for generations. Goddamn fool. It's not new, you know, Baphomet and Moloch, all that stuff, and I'm not giving them any glory. No, just free publicity. This is not new, but in every generation they keep trying again. So as we, the people of God, have to rise up without being afraid and come against it. And so now the blood of the innocents here in our own nation continues to cry out from the ground. So it is our obligation, it's our opportunity, it's our honor and our blessing to stand for life in America. New York is having a lot of problems, but that's the home of abortion. We have to remember that. So now, in the name of Jesus, by the power of Holy Spirit, we bind and break that and cancel that spirit of abortion, that spirit of murder, the spirit of shedding of innocent blood that includes all the other things, the sexual abuse and the manipulations of young children who are allowed to be born, the infanticide, the abortion, the genocide. We bind and curse and cancel these contracts. Right, because she's got a contractual relationship with Baphomet and Moloch? What? And she's crazy. I find it interesting that she's talking about the blood of innocents crying out from the ground, Abel-like. But the dead innocents who got this disease because Clorox Claudius started ignoring it. They say in January, according to testimony that will likely be heard in the coming week or so in the House, but it now looks like he was ignoring it since November. News breaking out of the state of Florida today via the Miami Herald that Florida's first case of the Rona may have come in December of 2019. Man, it's just going to... we're eventually going to find out that I was really right about all of this. But it was here a hell of a lot earlier than we thought. But imagine being so self-centered, so self-congratulatory, so morally and ethically bereft and dead inside, that you could suggest that your all-powerful creator of the universe sent some sort of malevolent force flying around New York City to kill people who had never had an abortion. to kill people who might not even have supported abortion. But that was the magic trigger for the horrors that have stalked Gotham for lo these months. What a horrible, disgusting person she is. And of course, along the way, she talked about this little coffee klatch that she had with God Almighty after she'd done been to see Clorox Claudius in the White House. She said, "And I remember when COVID hit, I said, 'God, is this you?'" Velveeta King said. "And God said, 'No.'" And I said, "So why did you allow it then?" You know, because Velveeta King just has that kind of power, that she can call out the almighty, knows all, sees all, tells nothing creator of the universe for what he does and doesn't let happen. And make no mistake, he's a he in her world because it's a complicated. "So why did you allow it then?" And then he says, "So y'all could do a 2 Chronicles 7:14. I don't know if that's anything like a number six. A whoopin' and a whompin', a beatin' every living thing that lives, except the women." "You leave out the women?" "Well, hell no, we raped the shit out of them at the number six dance that night." Yeah. Right. "Y'all could do a 2 Chronicles 7:14. Two Chronicles walk into a bar. And so, Velveeta King is apparently fairly happy with the way things are working out. "We are blessed, and we thank God for a president who abhors abortion, who abhors the shedding of innocent blood, you know, except the innocent blood that he himself has been directly responsible for shedding. By the way, there is now online a Trump death clock, based on real science and real data, that shows the number of people who have died directly and proximately as a result of the ignorance, malevolence, malignance, and inaction of Donald J. Trump. The J stands for genocide. Maybe more on that in a minute. "We are blessed, and we thank God for a president who abhors abortion, who abhors the shedding of innocent blood, and puts behind that statement everything that he can put behind to continue to rescue these babies." You know, these babies that are not quite the same size as like a blackberry seed. "So we are very grateful. We have to speak life, choose life, and vote life. And never mind all the tens of thousands of lives that are dead because of the guy she says supports life. It is time now for us to rise and shine, for the light of the glorious gospel is truly upon us." I wonder if this sounds any better in the original Persian. "Bless our president, his team, his administration, his task force, even the tricky ones. They want to lie and pretend they're one thing and they're another thing. Just expose that, Lord, and deal with them in the name of Jesus." Because God is love, y'all. Hey. Abortion, says Steve in New York, except in 1967, Colorado became the first state to decriminalize abortion in cases of rape, incest, or in which pregnancy would lead to permanent physical disability of the woman. Similar laws were passed in California, Oregon, and North Carolina. In 1970, Hawaii became the first state to legalize abortions on the request of the woman, and New York repealed its 1830 law and allowed abortions up to the 24th week of pregnancy. Similar laws were soon passed in Alaska and Washington. In 1970, Washington held a referendum on legalizing early pregnancy abortions, becoming the first state to legalize abortion through a vote of the people. So, you know, North Carolina legalized abortion before New York did. Oh, but see, there's all those undesirables in New York,
all them Christ killers and everything that get people like Velveeta King so worked up. And God Almighty, they are worked up. Jim Baker was recently bemoaning the fact that he can only take checks right now because he got caught hustling a bogus bullshit colloidal silver snake oil, claiming that it would cure or kill the Rona. He is at present being sued by, of all people, the Attorney General of the state of Missouri, Eric Schmidt, for misrepresentations about the effectiveness of silver solution as a treatment for the Rona. Well, he's lawyered up. And the lawyers, I wonder if they're freebies. I wonder if maybe they come from that filthy tax-free outfit run by Matt Staver. Remember Sister Clerk Kim Davis's free lawyer who lawyered her right into jail? Oops. Yeah. The lawyers... have issued a press release. And they claim, of course, because anybody who ever delivered a cold hamburger to Jim Baker was persecuting him for being a Christian. And yes, they're being poor Jim Baker's being persecuted. Dateline Galena, Missouri. Lawyer, former Missouri governor, urges court to throw out complaint over Silver Solution health product, says suit violates First Amendment. Jay Nixon, the disgraced former governor and attorney general of Missouri, is on Team Baker. And he said, Jim Baker is being unfairly targeted by those who want to crush his ministry and force his Christian television program off the air. The video recording of the Jim Baker show clearly shows the allegations are false. Baker did not claim or state that Silver Solution was a cure for COVID-19. This case is about religious freedom.
There's one pretty good way of figuring that out. Let's go to the tail of the tape. This was back in February.
This influenza that is now circling the globe, you're saying that Silver Solution would be effective.
Well, let's say it hasn't been tested on this strain of the coronavirus, but it's been tested on other strains of the coronavirus and has been able to eliminate it within 12 hours.
Yeah.
Totally eliminate it, kills it, and deactivates it.
Yeah.
And then it boosts your immune system, so then you can support the recovery, because when you kill the virus, then the immune system comes into action to clear it out. So you want a vibrant immune system as well as an ability to deactivate these viruses.
What do you think? It sure sounded to me like he was saying that it would kill the Rona. But what's particularly interesting is, like I said, the date on this is February the 12th. So the date on this is February the 12th. That is 6 days that we know, 6 days after the first coronavirus death from community spread, a woman in her 50s who died at home, which meant that she probably got it in late December or early January, incubation periods being what they are and course of the virus being what it is. So since there was a buck to be made in it, Jim Baker was actually paying more attention to the Rona on February 12th, 2020,
than Clorox Claudius was. God, if only somebody could have gotten a case of silver solution to Corona Caligula. Then he could have started hustling it, and maybe he would have cared. I know. Too much to hope for. Let me see. Where's that Trump death clock story? There it is. The Trump death clock was announced. It went live in public today. It's the work of Eugene Jarecki, a filmmaker and an author. And his purpose in putting up the Trump death clock was to, quote, display both the number of people who have died in the country from COVID-19 and an estimate of that portion whose lives would have been saved had the president and his administration acted just 1 week earlier. I mean, this isn't about wondering what would have happened if he'd acted when he found out about it in, say, mid-November-ish. This is just 1 week earlier. And so they write in the Washington Post, or he writes in the Washington Post, Mr. Jarecki, he said, in January 2020, the Trump administration was advised that immediate action was required to stop the spread of COVID-19. According to NIAID Director Dr. Anthony Fauci, there was a lot of pushback to this advice. Trump declined to act until March 16th. Epidemiologists now estimate that had mitigation measures been implemented 1 week earlier, March 9th, 60% of American COVID-19 deaths would have been avoided. Jarecki went on to say this pandemic is ongoing, and the lives already unnecessarily lost demand we seek more responsible crisis leadership. Just as the names of fallen soldiers are etched on memorials to remind us of the cost of war, quantifying the lives lost to the president's delayed coronavirus response would serve a vital function. And so if you want to see it, you can go to, and this is some good URL choice, TrumpDeathClock.com. The number stands at present at 43,807. Of those dead from the coronavirus, 43,807 of them would still be alive had Clorox Claudius acted only 1 miserable week earlier. What a monster. What a monster. How do we know he's a monster? Because he is presiding over monstrosities. It was April in Washington State when the Seattle Indian Health Board had requested PPEs. They requested PPEs, they requested testing kits for the clinic that they run for the Native American community there. just test kits. What was the response? What did the monsters send them instead? Body bags. Body bags. The chief research officer of the Seattle Indian Health Board is Abigail Echohawk. She was interviewed by NBC News, and she said, my question is, are we going to keep getting body bags, or are we going to get what we actually need? Well, the Trump regime, the maggots, pretty well despise indigenous people like they despise anybody who's not pasty-faced and doughy and white. The chief executive officer of the Seattle Indian Health Board is Esther Lucero. She was aware that testing equipment had been requested. And when the body bags showed up, she said, my team turned ghost white. We asked for tests, and they sent us a box of body bags. They still got them. The package is full of zippered white bags and beige tags that have the legend on them, attach to toe. It filtered down to them through the King County Public Health Department distributor. Ms. Echo Hawk said, the Navajo Nation is in a crisis with cases, and there are tribes and other Indian organizations across the country that are in similar crises and can use medical supplies and help instead of watching people die. Reminiscent of a certain story involving blankets. Isn't it? Yeah. And it just keeps getting worse and worse. A brief correction. Thank you for the reminder. Irish Dave reminds me that Jay Nixon, former governor of Missouri, is he's one of those Joe Manchin Democrats. He's got a D after his name, but you'd never know it by how he behaves. Thanks for the reminder, Dave. And there are so many things that touch upon this plague and this virus that we simply don't understand. Like I said, the fact that we now know that it has morphed and changed. It has become more contagious. It was scientists at the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico who discovered that it has mutated into another strain. The story was in the Los Angeles Times. The new strain appeared in February in Europe, migrated quickly to the east coast of the United States, and has been the dominant strain across the world since mid-March. And here's the real choker in the deck. The study also said that the new strain could make people more vulnerable after a second infection. Now, full disclosure, the study has not been peer-reviewed. But one might hazard a guess that if it's coming out of the Los Alamos National Labs, that that's not quite the same as if it was coming out of, say, the Blessed Cathedral of Sacred Clorox Healing. And it was posted before it was peer-reviewed to speed up collaborations with scientists working on COVID-19 vaccines or treatments. And so what they've been doing is sequencing the genes of earlier strains of the virus and trying to see where how it got to be where it is. And among other things, the folks at Los Alamos worked with people, scientists at Duke University and the University of Sheffield in England, and they found 14 mutations of the coronavirus, one of which is of particular interest called D614G. And the scientists say that D614G is responsible for the change in the virus's spikes. As Irish Dave notes, even though this mutation is what has wreaked havoc on the east coast of the U.S., there's been no move on the part of the Maggot administration to start referring to it as the European flu, or the European coronavirus, or the Eurovirus. Gee, I wonder why. The leader of the study is Betty Korber. She's a computational biologist at Los Alamos. She said, the story is worrying as we see a mutated form of the virus very rapidly emerging and over the month of March becoming the dominant pandemic form. When viruses with this mutation enter a population, they rapidly begin to take over the local epidemic, and thus they are more transmissible. Up there at that pile of bricks known as Harvard, Associate Professor Bill Hanage takes issue. He says, I think those claims are suspect, to say the least. Major observation, a specific mutation in the spike protein of the virus has been a higher fraction of cases as the pandemic has worn on in multiple places. Given the role of the spike protein in the entry of the virus to cells, this might be reasonable. Now for the cold water. And see, Hanage gets to say that because he comes from Harvard. And we perpetuate this myth that there's great vast volumes of brilliance and genius at Harvard, when in fact every time you turn around, you're running into a Ron Monkey Up Duclantis or a Kaylee Maganini who was awarded a degree from that august institution. Hanage said, we need to distinguish between selection, in which a variant becomes more common because it leaves more descendants, and founder effects, in which a variant becomes more common because it was fortunate rolling the dice. By that I mean this variant might have been lucky and got introduced to places outside Wuhan and different approaches to social distancing early on. Well, what I find interesting in that is Darlene just sent along an article from NBC News. Headline, a shocking two-thirds of patients recently hospitalized in New York had already been staying home. They're not working. They're not traveling, Cuomo said. They were predominantly at home. Which is, in its own right, yes, terrifying. Because that means that nobody really knows how it's spreading. And if you don't really know how it's spreading, you don't really know how to protect yourself against it. You can only sort of hope.
The last few days is we asked hospitals, look at just those new cases who are coming in, right? Yesterday, 600 new cases. Where are those people coming from, and what can we learn from those people to further target and refine our strategy? When you look at where they're coming from, they are primarily coming from downstate New York, which is not surprising, basically equally distributed. Long Island is 18%. So that's a number that jumps out at you. Rockland, Westchester, which is where we did have a problem, that's down to 11%. When you look at the racial breakdown of who's getting hospitalized, you see it's disproportionately minorities, disproportionately African American and Latino, again, in downstate New York. Higher percentage male, 52-48. We don't know exactly why. But the virus doesn't discriminate generally. And a very high percentage comorbidities, which is what we've been talking about and which we understand, which is not a surprise. This is a surprise. Overwhelmingly, the people were at home, where there's been a lot of speculation about this. A lot of people, again, had opinions. A lot of people have been arguing where they come from and where we should be focusing. But if you notice, 18% of the people came from nursing homes. Less than 1% came from jail or prison. 2% came from the homeless population. 2% from other congregate facilities. But 66% of the people were at home, which is shocking to us. Disproportionately older. But by the way, older starts at 51 years old. I'm a little sensitive on this point. But if older starts at 51 years old, then that's a large number of us old folk in this state, in this country. So that whole vulnerable population being old, well, old is now 51 and up. So think about that. 60 to 70, 20%, 70 to 80, 19%. But 51 years old is old. Okay. Then I am very old. Transportation method, we thought maybe they were taking public transportation, and we've taken special precautions on public transportation, but actually no, because these people were literally at home. 2% took car services, 9% were driving their own vehicle. Only 4% were taking public transportation, 2% were walking. 84% were at home, literally. Were they working? No. They were retired or they were unemployed.
That's chilling. That means the thing is moving around in ways that had not been anticipated. That means that maybe the issue of what I described weeks ago as being a matter of ballistics and not medicine might be the case. That this shit's floating around in the air and that it doesn't dissipate. And of course, if you're talking about New York City, you're talking about people stacked in boxes on top of one another as high as the, you know, into the sky. That in turn means shared ventilation. God almighty, how do you even begin to sanitize an HVAC system in a 30-story building? But more than ever, this means stay safe, stay home, and if you see a maggot, treat them like the plague, because they are. I keep saying that. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to be cute. We have people who have who daily evince their lack of, I hate to say the word belief, but their lack of seriousness about how virulent this disease is. This evening's In Memoriam coming from Steve in New York. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump as of May 5th, 2020, 72,271 American people. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump as of April 5th, 2020, 11,793 American people. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump since April 5th, 2020, 60,478 American people. That's not how they're calculating the Trump death clock. The Trump death clock is using a statistical analysis that merely asks the question, what if he had acted on March the 9th instead of March the 16th? And that number gets you 48,000 Americans. Now, today, he began to talk a little bit about what this all really means. And from the Department of, oh my God, he said today that this is worse than Pearl Harbor. This is worse than 9/11. And in terms purely of numbers, he's absolutely correct. The difference being, however, that Pearl Harbor was an act of war against a military target that was perpetrated by the Empire of Japan. 9/11 was an act of war against an economic target perpetrated by our dear friends and partners in peace, the Saudis, alongside an Egyptian here and there, and maybe a Pakistani, but 15 out of the 19 hijackers were from the noble, puissant, majestic, high, gracious, serene Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. This, however, comes to us courtesy of the President of the United States of America, who, as Steve notes, is not presiding over monstrosities. He is causing them. What was curious, though, he said, it's worse than Pearl Harbor. It's worse than 9/11. What he didn't say was, it's worse than Vietnam. Because it is worse than Vietnam, but he can't say that because he's a shit-eating little coward. He's got a yellow stripe that runs down his back that's as broad as his back is. And it's worse than Vietnam. And he responded to Vietnam the same way he responded to this, by trying to ignore it and just trying to make sure that it didn't affect him. There's a killer on the road. His brain is burning like a toad. Take a long holiday. Let your children play. If you give this man a ride, sweet family will die. There's a killer on the road. Donald J. Trump. The J stands for Jim Morrison. But we're just going to, according to him, we're just going to have to get used to the fact that some of us are going to have to die so that his buddies on Wall Street can get richer.
It seems little question that by beginning the reopening process and continuing it, there will likely be more cases of coronavirus, more deaths than there would have been had everything stayed shut down. Will the nation just have to accept the idea that by reopening, there will be more cases, there will be more deaths?
So I call these people warriors, and I'm actually calling now, as you know, John, the nation warriors. You have to be warriors. We can't keep our...
Warriors? Warriors? So what? First, there were the stimulus checks. Now everybody's going to get an AR-15 in the mail with teeny tiny itty bitty little bullets, and we can somehow or another miraculously shoot down virus particles in the air. This is not going to end well. It already hasn't. Warriors, because he keeps trying to.
I'm definitely a wartime president. Wage war slow in the driveway. Of course, this is not my underwear.
This isn't a war. This is a disease. And we're not going to be any better at treating this virus as a war than we were at treating drugs like a war. But, you know, when you're a right-wing piece of shit, everything is a war on something or another. Up to and including the fact that if it is a war, it is a war on the citizenry of the United States being waged by the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Country closed down for years, and we have to do something. And hopefully that won't be the case, John, but it could very well be the case. You won't be locked in a house, and some people should stay if you're over a certain age. I mean, you've seen that, right? Elderly people, or especially elderly people with
comorbidities,
with a problem, yeah, where they have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It attacks these people viciously. And I think they will be staying back, and we're strongly recommending that they do that. We're saying over 60, and especially over 60 if you have diabetes or heart problems or whatever problem you might have. So, but we have to get our country open again. And you see it. Look, you cover it.
We do? Because he says that like it's an immutable law of nature. But it isn't. We can wait this out. The economy is not going to simply give up the ghost and die. No. The economy is a patient in an artificially induced coma. We can wake it up again. All we have to do is take care of ourselves, take care of our citizenry, take care of we the people. It's in the Constitution. But he's losing his shit because he knows that more and more people despise the very air that he breathes. Yeah. Of course, he himself is probably a vector of the disease. He went out to Arizona to the Honeywell factory yesterday and LARPed around and smollocked with some executives and talked about what a good time it was. And of course, we all know that they blared his new anthem, "Live and Let Die." So today he used some nurses as hand props. And he had him standing all around behind him, but nobody was wearing a mask.
President, yesterday you went to Arizona, and you had said before the trip that you would likely wear a mask at the mask factory. You ended up not wearing one.
Well, I actually did have one, no. I put a mask on. Yeah, I had a mask on for a period of time.
We didn't see you with a mask on.
Well, I can't help it if you didn't see me. I mean, I had a mask on, but I didn't need it. And I asked specifically the head of Honeywell, should I wear a mask? And he said, well, you don't need one in this territory. And as you know, we were far away from people, from the people making the masks. They were making the masks. But I did put a mask on, and it was a Honeywell mask, actually. And I also had a 3M mask, and I had about four other masks. But I did have it on. I don't know if you saw it or not, but I had it on.
You can bet your ass that those are paid product placements.
Not too long, but I had it on. I had it on backstage.
I had it on backwards.
But they said you didn't need it. So if I didn't need it, and by the way, if you noticed, nobody else had it on that was in the group.
We just saw
and they were the people.
We saw the workers wearing them.
The workers had them on. Yeah, the workers were there, yeah, because they're working next to each other.
Because they're not regular people. They're workers.
Okay. Mr. President, what kind of message does it send that you're surrounded by nurses who are not doing social distancing, who are not wearing masks? What kind of message?
Well, I can't help that. I mean, look, I'm trying to be...
They are literally standing behind him with no masks and not social distancing, and he says, I can't do anything about that. God almighty, that is... Somebody render, I can't do anything about that into Latin, and we'll just put that on the seal of the presidency. Let's see. known non possum facere huic. Non possum facere huic. I'm not able to do that. You know, I think that might also suffice if you wanted to translate Hall & Oates' smash hit single, I Can't Go For That. That would probably work in that instance, too. And then eventually, one of the nurses who was there got to say something about PPE. That didn't work well.
So PPE has been sporadic, but it's been manageable, and we do what we have to do. We're nurses, and we learn to adapt and do whatever the best thing that we can do for our patients to get the job done and get the care provided. And that's what we're going to continue to do as COVID-19 continues.
Oops. Shouldn't have said that.
Sporadic for you, but not sporadic for a lot of other people.
Oh, no, I agree, Mr. President.
Because absolutely. I've heard the opposite. I've heard that they are loaded up with gowns now. And, you know, initially we had nothing. We had empty cupboards. We had empty shelves. We had nothing because it wasn't put there by the last administration.
You turd. Jesus Christ. It's just a wad of grievances and insecurities and madness. Ugh. Jeremy in Vermont says, well, he just said it without saying it. If you're under 60 and have an underlying condition, you may just have to die because money. And there's not a damn thing we can do except hope that we can eject him from office in November. And even then, we have to wait, dear God, over 2 long months to see him go the hell away. Christ. Let's see. Been a lot going on while I've been filibobstering. My apologies. Jeremy also noted God speakers. So let's get this straight. It's Velveeta King, Pat Robertson, and Moses talking to his burning bush. Hint, it wasn't green. It was probably his enslaved wife with an STD who claimed God speaks to them and them alone. Well, that's how the racket works, Jeremy. And, a note from Lady B. That's really cool about Malloy. Thank you. Lady B says, I just laugh when I hear the term LARPing and smollicking. My grandmother used to say it, but she was born in Arkansas. She was basically talking about folks that were goofing off and acting silly or irresponsible. It's just part of the colloquialisms of the South, but if you grew up in it anywhere else, still sounds kind of funny. Well, remember, there's a mountain culture in Arkansas, too. As for Velveeta King, Lady B says, every black family has that one relative that goes sideways like this. And don't forget, her family's been in the spotlight for a while, but none of the King children have been able to channel black activism like their dad did. And the family itself hasn't felt relevant since Coretta died. but the bills still need to be paid. You get it how you live it. They do okay financially, but those houses and cars ain't going to pay for themselves. Most sensible and younger blacks have moved on. The family business just isn't as meaningful a memory for folks under a certain age. So Velveeta has got to keep the money flowing, and like Diamond and Silk, you sometimes have to do whatever it takes. I don't pay her no mind. The family's been LARPing and smolicking for years already. They don't have as much power as they used to. We're going to need a lot more than what they were able to do, which was a lot, but it's still sad that all that work seems to be reversing itself. Well, Velveeta's been the white sheep of the family for rather a long time. Coretta didn't even have anything for her. Because you'll recall toward the end of her life, Coretta Scott King was trying to carry on the work and the legacy. And that's why she had no problem saying, for instance, that Dr. King would have been fully supportive of full civil rights for the LGBTQ community. So, Oh, and thank you. Thank you very kindly to Alma. Alma has put a $50 challenge on the table. Alma will match the next $50 that comes in and hopefully get us down, and that'll get us down to $294 in fundraising here at midweek. Thank you. Thank you so much, Alma. Alma sending the note. We are in this together. So it's Alma's We're in This Together challenge for the next $50 that rolls in. Clarence in South Carolina, Stan, says, if a warrior dies, the families of the warriors should be compensated from the government for their loved one's sacrifice. Fuck the economy. Long live life. That statement from Trump was, like many others, totally unnecessary. Well, you know, there's really not a word that comes out of his mouth that's necessary. There's only two words that could come out of his mouth that would be necessary to the well-being of this nation. And those two words are, I resign. Masks, Steve in New York says, masks are fucking props to him in this reality show called his presidency. Oh, and you know, last night we had the dirty little pizzeria in Orrville, Ohio, that says not wearing a mask is in the Constitution. And so they've no real interest in it. What else did I say? Oh, they're having a hissy over masks in Oklahoma, Stan. Because, of course, they are. Yesterday in Oklahoma, in Arizona, Stan, were screaming at the maggots were screaming at people. Brianna J. Frank of the Arizona Republic was sent to cover it, and a man walked up to her and said that wearing masks is muzzling yourself. It looks weak, especially for men. And then went on to call Ms. Frank a piece of shit. The privileged dude went on to say, I'm sure you know, but I doubt she does. What are you, 2 or 3 years out of college? What business do you have writing the news? And another woman screamed at her, you're on the wrong side of history. You're on the wrong side of patriotism. You're like communists. And then, of course, there was the dude with a buffalo horn hat, very definitely not an indigenous American, who was screaming his fool head off And once again, as seems to be the case, they all look like they're either on their way to or from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention. God, the idiots. And then, of course, like I said, there's Oklahoma Stan. Agence France-Presse reporting that in Stillwater, Oklahoma, which is, of course, the home of Oklahoma State University, the mayor there made masking mandatory for shops and restaurants while they were, because Oklahoma Stan is opening too early, like so many other maggot states. The order went into effect on May the 1st, and literally within hours, according to AFP, the emergency calls started coming in to the 911 center from people working for a living in these reopened businesses saying that maggots, you know, Oklahomans, were insulting them and threatening them with physical violence because they were being asked to wear a mask. One fellow went so far as to look at one individual and say, "If the mayor don't lift this mask rule, I'm going to invoke the Second Amendment." In other words, he was willing to murder people because he's too, I guess, insecure in his maggot masculinity to put on a mask. And so the mayor, Will Joyce, turned tail and ran, just like Frontier running under the bed. He issued an amended order that encourages people to wear face masks, but doesn't require them to do so. The city manager, Norman McNichol, told Agence France-Presse, "We didn't give in to bullies. We are protecting the safety of our business owners and their employees." You know what else? You know how else you could have protected them? Keep the goddamn rule in place and have the people who are committing crimes arrested and jailed. But these reopening states are seeing their cases climb and climb and climb. And you know, they don't care. The Republicans who run these states simply do not care. Because they would rather see people die. I mean, this is really how it works out. They would rather see people die than pay unemployment insurance. By way of providing an excuse to all of this miserable behavior, Debbie Aguiar, she used to be a nurse. She's 40 years old. And she said the masking should have been made a requirement at the beginning of the shutdown, not on the reopening. And Debbie Aguiar said, "In our state, we're pretty independent. We have a lot of people who believe a lot in their fundamental rights. Wearing a mask has nothing to do with fundamental rights. It has to do with the simple respect for one's fellow members of the community." So look at it this way. Do you remember, any time we've had a mass shooting in the United States? Some of us will say, "Gosh, I think we need better laws for dealing with these mass shootings and trying to prevent some of them." Well, the NRA will immediately run out and say, because they've done it 100 times if they've done it once,
you can't do that. You can't, because it's in the Constitution. Right there, it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You can't do that. You can't make no laws about not wanting no mass shootings, because I ain't murking.
This is a line of reasoning that says that we also can't have stop signs. Yeah, because
it won't stop all the mass shootings. Even if you make a law, there's still going to be mass shootings.
Which is the same thing as saying we can't have stop signs because sometimes people run stop signs. You're not going to make everybody stop at that intersection with your stop sign, so there's no sense in having a stop sign at all, and people can just run willy-nilly through the intersections, and hey, some people are just going to die.
For freedom!
So look at masking.
Stop telling us how to look at masking, Bob.
So look at masking in that sense. If a mask stops you from ejecting 100%, if a mask stops you from ejecting, if without a mask you would eject 100% of your virus particles, whatever that number is, in any given breath, and that those things can float and sail and blow along in the breeze and be sucked up into the respiratory tracts of other people. If you can reduce that number by 10% or 20% or 30% by wearing a mask, isn't that worth it?
Well, not to the freedom-loving constitutionalists. You're taking away my liberty.
Sit, Liberty, sit.
Woof!
I mean, it only makes sense. No one is out there making the statement or making the claim that a mask of any sort, unless it was like the oh my God, respirators with the two big what's-its and the plastic shield and all of that shit. Nobody's out there saying that it's going to stop you from getting anything. But it might stop you asymptomatically from infecting someone else. It might reduce the particulates by some percentage. If you had a barrier that would stop 20% of bullets, if somebody was shooting at you with an AR-15 and that barrier would stop 20% of bullets and give you a chance to maybe get away, wouldn't you want that? Wouldn't you think stopping those 20% of bullets would be worth it? Anybody who's ever watched Star Trek knows that the shields really aren't worth a fuck because they don't stop all of the incoming. I mean, you can take two or three hits, and the next thing you know, Scotty's on the intercom saying, "Captain, the shields won't handle much more." Captain's shields are at 30%. Curiously, however, Starfleet did not say, "Ah, fuck the shields. They're not stopping all of the Klingon death rays or disruptor beams or phaser fire, and they're not stopping all of the Romulan photon torpedoes. So let's just not have any shields." And there we go. But they have been astroturfed, the maggots, into thinking that somehow wearing a mask, because of course their god emperor refuses to wear one because he's deeply insecure about his own masculinity and his own sexuality, especially ever since he started taking the finasteride and, you know, can't do anything anymore. Yeah. So they see it that way too. And thus they become plague rats. Maggots. Spreaders of disease. Jeremy in Vermont says, Bob, stop giving us a sad and beating us to the stop telling us. Oh, that's right. You guys are the only ones who get to do it. No, I get to do the Bob stop telling us to. I invented it. Steve in New York says, masks are cowardice. You mean like the Klan? Well, yeah, kind of. Blast from the past. Irish Dave says, so Laura Bush, Laura Welch at the time, ran a stop sign and killed someone because it's written right there on that goddamn piece of paper? Something like that. That stop sign didn't stop Laura, so we should just get rid of all stop signs. Somewhere, the ashes of Aristotle are trying to reconstitute themselves merely so that they can get up and scream. Jack in Shreveport said, I missed the first couple of minutes or so of the show. What's this about Malloy? Malloy's program will run as a backup to Progressive Voices at HeadOn.live and eventually probably at White Rose as well, but I have to work that part out still. Beginning this evening at 9 p.m., the Malloy program will air at HeadOn.live. And so you just tune into HeadOn.live just like you ordinarily would, and it'll be right there, and it'll be there pretty much every night, which is good, and I'm excited about it. Oh, now it's just cold. Billable Rick says no cowbell for Jeremy. He has to try harder. Billable Rick, stop telling Jeremy how hard he has to try. Meh. Meanwhile, from Irish Dave, Bob, quit telling us what age we have to die. Well, that wasn't me. That was Donald Trump. So, by the way, David in South Carolina, Stan, sent this along. Good while back. Just a reminder, subject line, nursing homes. We're having cases and deaths, and nursing homes are not counted. Military, not counted either. Still not testing, but about 1% of the population. Not a flaw. It's a feature. These maggot governors do not want to count. They don't want to test. Because it's easier. You know, if a whole lot of people die, that just means more money and more money for the Republicans to raid. See how it works? I mean, there was a thing yesterday when Clorox Claudius went to Arizona. And I'm sure it's just a coincidence. But lo and behold, according to the Arizona Republic, the team who's modeling the spread of the disease at Arizona State University and the University of Arizona, they got a little note from the Arizona Department of Health Services telling them, the researchers, to pause. Their modeling of the coronavirus pandemic, and then made sure that they would follow through on the pause by making sure that they didn't have access to data. Because you wouldn't want to actually know what the disease was doing to your community. The email from DHS Bureau Chief of Public Health Statistics S. Robert Bailey arrived Monday evening after Governor Doug Ducey announced plans to begin easing social distancing in the coming days. Why? Well, because the model developed by Arizona State and the University of Arizona demonstrated that reopening at the end of May, 25 days from now, was the only scenario that didn't cause cases to skyrocket in Arizona. The only one. In late April, one of the researchers, according to the article from the Arizona Republic, Tim Lant, a mathematical epidemiologist at Arizona State, said the model showed five different scenarios for how the disease could progress in Arizona, depending on how social distancing efforts were relaxed. The slowest curve, based on if the state reopens at the end of May, is the only one that doesn't put me immediately back on an exponential growth curve. You know, that 23rd day with the lily pads in the pond. But that doesn't matter to Governor Ducey, because he's worried about the money more than he's worried about the people. Jesus. But there's other stuff going on in government right now. There's other stuff going on in the world right now besides the Rona. Such as the fact that, I don't want to do any spoilers or anything, but I've watched all three seasons of, or is it two? Maybe it's just two. Jack Ryan on Amazon Prime. And no spoilers or anything. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the latest season of Jack Ryan, the plot line had to do with Venezuela. Well, lo and behold, some mercenaries got stone cold caught trying to foment a coup in Venezuela. And just like the plot line of an old Mission Impossible episode, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, you know, he graduated first in his class from West Point. Oh, that's still good. It immediately disavowed any knowledge of the mercenaries' action. Because it was pretty embarrassing. Because they're Americans, and they got caught in a failed coup attempt. Groups of anti-Maduro pigeons were seen drinking in bars saying, coup, coup. Peace be upon you, Prophet Bill Hicks. Interviewed on Democracy Now!, Miguel Tinker Salas, author of The Enduring Legacy, Oil, Culture, and Society in Venezuela, said, it looks like a bad Rambo movie or a really bad telenovela. The U.S. is seeking regime change, and the consequences for Venezuela could be very dire going forward. Yeah, it didn't work out real well for the American mercenaries that, of course, had nothing to do with the CIA or anybody like that. No. Mm-mm. Of course not. What else? How about, you know, the Senate came back into session. The worst thing ever to come out of Sheffield, Alabama, namely Addison Mitch McConnell, drag the Senate back in session, not to deal with Americans who are suffering and desperately in need of a government that responds to their needs and provides for the general welfare and promotes the public good or any of that. Nope. Chinless Mitch dragged them back to have hearings on shitbird nominees from Planet Maggot. Yeah. And, you know, we thought that his reputation was so horrible and that he had been caught in a lie about what he did or didn't do in the war on terror, that representing John Ratcliffe had kind of disappeared. But son of a gun, the Clorox Claudius couldn't find anybody to fill the position of Director of National Intelligence. And so there's John Ratcliffe. Rats right over a cliff. Rats following Trump right over a cliff. To had himself a confirmation hearing. It proved to be a bad day for John Ratcliffe, because one of the people who got to examine him was none other than California Junior Senator Kamala Harris, who had a big old handful of receipts and was fresh out of fucks to give.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congressman, the U.S. intelligence community has an important role in warning our leaders about pandemics like COVID-19, because outbreaks, of course, are not just a public health matter, but also a matter of national security. Based on public statements and reporting alone, do you believe that President Trump has accurately conveyed the severity of the threat of COVID-19 to the American people?
Are you saying presently?
We are in the midst of the pandemic presently, correct?
Right.
Ouch. You mean like now? Water? Like from the toilet?
So repeat the question, because I guess I'm misunderstanding. I'm sorry. Has he accurately reflected the status?
Repeat the question. I couldn't understand what you were saying. I couldn't hear it through your blackness.
Of the pandemic?
Conveyed the severity of the pandemic, yes. Has he accurately conveyed the severity of COVID-19 to the American people?
I believe so.
You do. And according to...
Believing. He's believing. That's a lovely little fig leaf, that verb, believe. Kind of gets you out from under that whole swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth problem, doesn't it? Oh, I didn't say I knew it to be true. I just believe it, because I believe in him. I love him. He's like Jesus to me. God, I just want to be closer to him. I do. Oh, he's so dynamic and so magnetic and he's just so MAGA. MAGA.
April 27, 2020, Washington Post article. President Trump received upwards of a dozen briefings on COVID-19 from the U.S. intelligence agencies between January and February of this year, during which time he repeatedly denied the severity of the threat. On January 22nd, he said, quote, "We have it totally under control." On February 22nd or 26th, he insisted that the number of cases would be, quote, close to zero within a number of days. As recently as March 10th, the president stated, quote, "Just stay calm. It will go away." And I'm sure you're familiar with the most recent reports, including today, that we may see as many as 3,000 deaths a day in America because of COVID-19. What would you do if confirmed? If you believed the president was not taking the warnings from the intelligence community seriously?
Well, I can't answer that question. because he's always going to be right. Him and Jesus, they're always going to be right. God, I love him. Please don't make me say nothing ugly about him, or he's liable to tweet about me, and then I'll soil myself.
Senator, the intelligence that that I would deliver as the Director of National Intelligence.
I don't know nothing about fighting no plague.
The statements that, the president said this, none of those things will influence the intelligence that I deliver to this committee and the committee in the House and members of Congress. I made the point in my opening, this is one of the highest, the first priorities is getting answers to the American people who deserve answers, and you do as a member of the Oversight Committee, and I do if I'm still a member of the Oversight Committee. And whatever those answers are, Senator, you will get them. They won't.
I mean, if he'll let me testify, because I know once I'm Director of National Intelligence, I ain't ever going to have to testify before you again. I'm never going to have to speak to you again. I'm never going to have to look at you again, because it doesn't matter if you bury me up to my neck in subpoenas. I ain't coming, because there's not a court in this country that will enforce a subpoena against this administration. And by the way, did I happen to mention that the Attorney General is still Bill Barr to prosecution, lady? Did I? Because he's not going to enforce a subpoena either. So I'm going to sit here and I'm going to mumble some wordy things, but the whole thing comes out to fuck you.
Be shaded, regardless of what anyone says. I will say this. One of the things that I've learned as a nominee is that members of the intelligence community will tell you things that they wouldn't tell you as an overseer of intelligence. And the thing that I want to
really?
Make clear to all the members here is the concern of the men and women in the intelligence community is they don't want to be leveraged by anyone on either side of the aisle.
Well, with all due respect, sir, in my experience being on the Intelligence Committee in the United States Senate, the intelligence community has been pretty forthright with us when we ask them questions in our role of oversight. So what exactly are you referring to?
I'm just saying in the perspective as the conversations that I've had over the past few months as I have been considered for this, I've had exposure to a lot of intelligence community members who have just expressed the sentiment that they want to do their job, they want to deliver the best intelligence, and they don't want to be leveraged from anyone on either side of the aisle. That was the only point. I wasn't directed at you, Senator, at all.
Oh, no, I didn't take it that way.
Okay.
And how long have you been serving on the House Intelligence Committee?
Year and 5 months, I guess.
Okay.
He guesses.
You were appointed to that committee in 2019, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then in our fourth report on Russian interference into the 2016 election, this committee has once again reaffirmed the unanimous consensus of 17 intelligence agencies that Russia interfered with the aim of benefiting then-candidate Trump's political campaign. However, you and other allies of the president have sought to cast doubt on the consensus conclusions, raising concerns for many of us about your ability to be unbiased, which is a necessity to head the DNI. Will you accept the intelligence provided to you by the men and women of the intelligence community, no matter your personal beliefs? And do you accept the findings of the intelligence community as it relates to the Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election?
Which, by the way, the guy who nominated you continues to call a hoax. I kind of wish she'd worked that in there.
To your first question, I will accept. To the second question about specific to Russia 2017.
2016.
I'm sorry, 2016. Earlier in the, I made the point that I respect both committees. I think there's a difference of opinion between the House Intelligence Committee and this committee in terms of one specific finding. I wasn't on the, as you pointed out, I was not on the House Intelligence Committee at the time of that. I respect both committees, but I haven't seen the underlying intelligence with respect to that one finding.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator.
Please don't hurt me.
That fool is going to be the head of the director of national intelligence. Wow. You know, just wow. Oh, by the way, I've been filibustering now for the better part of 2 hours, technical difficulties notwithstanding. And if you'd like to check in with the program, you're more than welcome. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. And, of course, the stress line for good or ill, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And thanks going out to Steve from Georgistan and Miss Karen and Little Cletus and Little Twiggy. We are $30 away from meeting Alma's All in This Together challenge. Thank you, Steve and Karen, Little Cletus, Little Twiggy. Thank you. So hopefully that 30 will roll in, and that'll take us down to, like I said, 294. And that'll mean we'll only have $94 of yesterday to finish that day off. And thanks for a little bit of Latin help from Pauline.
I couldn't do anything about that. Would be non poterant aliquid de illo.
Yeah, I can't imagine him speaking Latin either, can you? But thanks. I was trying to come up with some sort of pidgin Latin on the fly. That scans considerably better. Thank you, Pauline. Jude pointing out Arizona's disdain for the facts. Right in our face, Bob. With Arizona's removing the scientists currently at two universities there focusing on this virus. My God, Bob, staggering and trying to grasp. But then, again, it's one of the 14 defining characteristics of fascism. Disdain for intellectuals. True. Thank you, Jude. And it goes hand in hand with something that happened in Florida a couple of days ago. The administration of the racist, white supremacist, adjacent, illegitimate Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, the guy who was only elected to office with the help of real live, no kidding Nazis. He's, according to the Tampa Bay Times, his state health department is now suppressing data from medical examiners' reports. Why? Because, well, the medical examiners, who actually are in the business of figuring out why people die, were issuing numbers about the Rona that were around 10% higher than the official bullshit numbers being put out by the administration of white supremacist adjacent illegitimate Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, who was only elected to office with the help of real live, no kidding Nazis. And so going on, 2 weeks, there have been no reports from the medical examiners made available to the public and no idea when it's going to happen again. Interviewed by the Tampa Bay Times, Dr. Stephen Nelson, the chairman of the State Medical Examiners Commission, said that he's been told by the state officials they're planning to remove probable causes of death from the examiner's reports, thereby making it impossible to tell how many people medical examiners think have died in the Trump pandemic. This, of course, is illegal as fuck. Dr. Nelson said this is no different than any other public record we deal with. It's paid for by taxpayer dollars, and the taxpayers have a right to know. And the Tampa Bay Times pointed out along the way, last month, the state tried to persuade the medical examiner's office in Miami-Dade County to restrict access to its death records. The Miami Herald reported on that. somebody is apparently getting some data out, though, based on the report out of the Miami Herald in the last 24 hours, that the first Rona death in Florida was likely in December. And again, do the math. If the death is in December, that means that the infection is in early December, which means the incubation period is somewhere back in, oh, there it is again, November. Goddamn bunch of homicidal maniacs. All right, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. This is Lou, first-time caller.
Oh, hey, Lou. Good to hear from you.
Hi. Yeah, hi. I sent an email to you yesterday about a petition, and I drafted something last night. I sent it to you over the Contact the Program.
Yeah.
And I was hoping for some feedback, some thoughts. Okay, did you get that?
Yeah, I just have to dig it up.
Okay.
Let's see.
I don't need it now, but hopefully maybe you'll get back to me. I wasn't really specific on the harms that Trump has pulled. I was very generic in general because he's done so many and it could take forever. So that's kind of weak. But if you and yours, or I could pull in another. Yeah. Okay.
Wait a minute. I'm looking here. I'm trying. I've got your original email talking about the idea of it.
Yeah, then today it's long, it's lengthy, it's a couple pages on Word. I could send it again, or it's another address I could use, or...
I
guess I could send it via Skype.
Skype's not helpful because I'd have to look in a completely different direction. I saw it earlier, and it's somewhere in my email here. It's just a matter of finding the confounded thing.
I could send it again, but yeah, any feedback that you can think of would be appreciated.
Well,
I
can tell you what I was brainstorming, and that's what I mentioned last night. What I mentioned last night is if you're talking about being able to have somebody that you could direct a substantive petition to, then I think
it is Pence.
Yeah,
see it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Pence and the 25th Amendment.
Yes, for Section 4.
Yes.
Yes. That's what I just kind of parroted that language. And then I, like in the Declaration of Independence, they say King George did this, he did that, he did this, he did that. I was more generic and said unnecessary death for 70,000 Americans. Then I just said record of impeachment incorporated by reference. A couple of books, a couple of newspapers. But not very specific, because I don't think this is really going to go anywhere. I just want to be a pain in the side and see if we get lucky with a lot of people signing it. But I can send it to you again if you want, and today, and then maybe we can talk about tomorrow.
No, I got it. I got it here. I got it.
Oh. We, the people of the United States of America, do hereby petition the Honorable Michael Richard Pence. You got that one?
Yep, I got it.
Okay.
I'm just reading along. Yeah, I think you could, we're just kind of editing on the fly. I think you could lose the or of such other body as Congress may by law provide simply because
that's
not going to happen.
That's not that, yes.
That,
yes, I know.
Congress would have to act for that.
Yes, that's fine. Yes, I understand. I can take that out.
And what I would do is I'd use that language over and over again. For instance, when you say he is unable to execute his sworn yada, 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 just say he's unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Use that language again.
Okay.
And then... I would not include the impeachment at all.
Okay.
I wouldn't include any extraneous references to anything else but his inability to discharge the powers and duties of his office.
Okay. Aren't these these are not specific. Okay. I mean, take all that stuff out down there?
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But I would like to, you know, you have to list, like, what's an example of him not executing the powers and duties of his office?
Saying what? That, well, okay, it's kind of like the quotes that you've just heard Kamala Harris read off to John Ratcliffe when he said it's totally under control. And then he said, there's like 15 cases now, and soon it'll be five, and soon it'll be zero. And he said it'll miraculously disappear. It'll miraculously disappear in the spring.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do have. We have a totally under control period. It is one person coming in from China.
Yeah.
So I have that. If that's all you think I should put, that's fine. I can do that. It's not complicated.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually just. Using the language that he used, the petition itself can be quite encyclopedic, and then at the bottom, you put for all of the foregoing, we the undersigned do hereby petition you, Vice President Michael Richard Pence, to use the power delegated to you under Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. And transmit the letter as described here and above. For the good,
okay.
One
more question for you.
Okay.
I'm sorry that this is boring for your listeners. Let's see. We say along with, the United States Constitution, along with the majority view, the principal of the executive departments, she does transmit to the president pro tempore, blah, blah, blah. Complete written deck. Okay, where do you want me to repeat unable and unable?
Oh, a complete written declaration, just in the next paragraph, as has been well and extensively documented, and will be recited herein below. The President of the United States is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office.
Okay. All righty. You know, I don't think we'll see. It's just be fun if we got a lot of signatures.
Yeah.
That's all.
And you know, back when we had a rules-based administration, for instance, if you got 25,000 signatures, a response to the petition would be automatically required and triggered.
Yeah, but we shall see. But thank you. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Lou. It's great to hear from you. I hope it won't be your last call.
Okay.
Yeah, don't be a stranger.
Well, I doubt it. I think it will. I mean, I'll be calling in. Yeah, I need to get your Skype address sometime, too.
It's just Bob.
I'm having a little trouble picking you up today. I mean, this is...
Brother Deacon Ace is doing some... trying to execute some technical changes that'll make things considerably better.
Yeah, I'm getting on TuneIn. I'm getting on TuneIn, but not over the Internet. So whether it could be my Internet problem, I don't know. Your Skype address?
Skype address is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn.
Okay, Bob Kincaid Horn, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I really enjoy the show. I started listening a few weeks ago, and I'm really enjoying it.
Have you heard anything from our buddy Kevin?
We speak every day briefly, and things are looking up. He apparently doesn't feel like he lost too much, and the VA is going to try and get him a new pad, some sort of computer, but not a full-blown computer. He did get the money from the government for the stimulus, and I hope he can buy a computer with that. He did not have a lot of property, so the bottom line is, he's a genius right now, but he's safe, and that's what's good. So he's hoping in about a week he'll get a new apartment and start settling in again.
Good. So, well, when you do talk to him, tell him that he is in our thoughts.
Yes, I will. I'm sure he'll go back and listen to all these old shows, too.
I hope so.
Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Lou. Take care.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Sure.
Nothing like a new friend, and that's Lou. Thanks for calling, Lou. And you know, it's a little bit of activism coming up with that petition. I mean, even if it's a foregone conclusion that Pence is too much of a toady and lickspittle to say yes, it would be, I think there would be a certain amount of power if the thing could get legs. If it could get a bunch of people to sign on to it, I think that'd be fabulous. Oh, and thank you to Jeremy. Jeremy just jumped back in again, and Jude jumped in. And that means that we've only got 10 more bucks to meet Alma's All in This Together challenge. Be wonderful if that challenge could be met. Thank you very kindly to Jude and Jeremy and Steve from Georgistan and Miss Karen and Little Cletus and Little Twiggy. Thank you. Like I said, other things going on in the nation besides the ongoing horror of this plague. There was scary news out in the last 24 hours about Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I guess she had an outpatient treatment for a gallstone. It was non-surgical, non-invasive, and apparently they got her better. But she participated in a hearing that was streamed live, and it was new. You know, the Supreme Court steadfastly refuses to allow cameras in the courtroom lest we actually see them in those five thugs led by old Balls and Strikes Roberts, and of course Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Sammy Shoot the Black Kid in the back of the head even though he's 30 feet away and running away from you, and Ann's boy Neil, and of course the boy blunder Brat Kavanaugh, who loves beer and baseball and getting all of his debts paid by people we still don't know who they were. So Justice Ginsburg joined the hearing literally from her hospital bed. For a challenge to the Affordable Care Act's requirement that businesses provide no-cost birth control for the women of this country. You know, what that great American, recent recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and guy who is surviving, oddly enough, lung cancer, Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, the guy who sent his maid out with a cigar box full of cash and returned for her bringing it back with a box full of pills, you know, street narcotics. Birth control, which he referred to as slut medicine. And so in this hearing, more businesses, of course, fronted by AstroTurf groups who were creating this solely as a means of chipping away further in the middle of a plague, I might add, at health care for Americans, in this case, the women they so thoroughly despise. Well, Solicitor General Noel Francisco Maggot was trying to defend an expanded exemption for businesses who don't want to provide birth control. Suffice to say that Justice Ginsburg cleaned Noel Francisco's clock.
Thank you, Counsel. Justice Thomas? Justice Thomas?
Slappy hasn't learned how to use the Skype yet, or the Zoom.
Well, we'll come back to Justice Thomas. Justice Ginsburg.
I never says anything anyway.
The glaring feature of what the government has done in expanding this exemption is to toss to the winds entirely Congress's instruction that women need and shall have seamless, no-cost comprehensive coverage. Seamless, no-cost comprehensive. coverage. This leaves the women to hunt for other government programs that might cover them. And for those who are not covered by, say, Medicaid or one of the other government programs, they can get contraceptive coverage only from paying out of their own pocket, which is exactly what Congress didn't want to happen. And in this area of religious freedom, the major trend has not to give everything to one side and nothing to the other side. We have had a history of accommodation, for tolerance here, respect for the employer's workers and students who do not share the employer's or the university's objections to contraceptives. And every time we have dealt with this subject, we have assumed that there would be a way to provide coverage that would not involve any cost sharing by the individual. So in Hobby Lobby, we assumed that the self-certification was okay because women could receive coverage without any cost sharing by the organization, the group health plan, or the participant. And then in Wheaton, we said nothing in the interim rule affects the ability of applicants, employees, and students to obtain without cost the full range of FDA-approved contraceptives. And finally, in Zubik, we said we instructed the parties to endeavor to put in place an accommodation of the employer's religious exercise while at the same time ensuring women covered by employers' health plans, ensuring that women receive full and equal health coverage, including contraceptive coverage. So you have just tossed entirely to the winds what Congress thought was essential, that is that women be provided these services with no hassle, no cost to them. Instead, you are...
Just a quick note. I know she said no hassle, but it sounds very close to with no assholes, which is exactly what Noel Francisco and all the other maggots are, and the poor aggrieved little freaks who spend all their time worrying about the workings of women's reproductive systems. But no. I wish she would have, but she didn't. And I'm going to let the clip play out. It's a masterclass in how to take apart these specious arguments from a gang of fascists, because they are. But if you have ever had a gallbladder attack, take a moment to appreciate the tremendous reserves of will and strength possessed by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Old Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas would be rolling around in bed, howling and screaming, because the damn things hurt. Justice Ginsburg, clear-eyed, clear-headed, probably hurting like hell, but recognizing how much rides in this moment. And by the way, earlier today, Clorox Claudius said that no, his administration would not withdraw its assault on the Affordable Care Act.
We're going to come up with something better and cheaper that doesn't have any pre-existing conditions, limitations, and it'll be better because black man law,
thereby completely demonstrating the fact that he doesn't have any working understanding whatsoever of how law is actually, you know, made. But of course, old Balls and Strikes Roberts, who perjured himself in his confirmation hearings, just like, well, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Kavanaugh, and Alito. It seems to be a job requirement to be a right-wing Supreme Court justice now, that little perjury problem. Good. I'm glad it's not just my ear. Scott in San Diego says, hassle, asshole. I thought that too. Does one of us need to be worried about this? No, it just sounded like what it was. And maybe it was just the goddess of irony at work.
Shifting the employer's religious beliefs, the cost of that, onto these employees who do not share those religious beliefs. And I did not understand RFRA to authorize harm to other people, which is evident here, that the women end up getting nothing. They are required to do just what Congress didn't want.
General Francisco, could you respond?
Yes, respectfully, Your Honor, I think I would disagree with the premise of your question, because there's nothing in the ACA, as this court recognized in Hobby Lobby, that requires contraceptive coverage. Rather, it delegated to the agencies the discretion to decide whether or not to cover it in the first place, and we think that that also includes the discretion to require that most employers provide it, but not the small number who have sincere conscientious objections, because otherwise the original church exempt.
Take those sincere conscientious objections, roll them up, turn them sideways, Noel Francisco, and stuff them right up your ass. Sincere conscientious objections. Bullshit. There's no sincerity involved whatsoever. And there's no conscience involved either. As proven by the fact that these goddamn godforsaken filthy Republican maggots don't give a rat's ass about the baby after it's born. Just while it's in a position where they can reach up into a woman's womb and use it as a sock puppet to control her. Fuck you, Noel.
Exemption likewise would be illegal, as would the effective exemption for self-insured church plants.
The church itself has enjoyed traditionally an exception from the very first case, the McClure case in the Fifth Circuit. The church itself is different from these organizations that employ a lot of people who do not share the employer's faith. And I thought that Congress had delegated to HRSA for its expertise in what contraceptive coverage women would need.
Briefly, General Francisco?
Yes, Your Honor. Respectfully, the church exemption and the effective exemption for self-insured church plan sweep much more broadly. They encompass not just churches and their integrated auxiliaries, but elementary schools, high schools, colleges, universities, charitable organizations, hospitals, and other healthcare organizations. So I don't think that they're authorized by the so-called ministerial exception. Rather, they're authorized by Section 13A4 and by RFRA.
Yeah, bullshit. And just a gentle reminder that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act originally came to life as an effort to keep government law enforcement agencies from screwing over indigenous peoples for their non-traditional religious practices. But now it protects corporations from having to acknowledge the sovereignty of a woman over her own reproductive system. Fuckers. Dirty little fuckers. Lady B, subject line, no shirt, no shoes, no shirt, no service. Add masks to that list. If a fucking cake decorator can refuse service to a gay couple for religious reasons, make PPE, or the lack of, a religion. It is my constitutional right to refuse you service for not wearing a mask. Take your business somewhere else. I don't need clientele that stupid and selfish anyway. But overall, Bob, I don't care. I avoid those people. I damn sure don't shop at Walmart for shit. This is America, baby. This is how we do. And don't we just. Lee in New York, subject line RBG. We all know that Moscow Mitch has that SCOTUS nomination letter ready for POTUS to Sharpie if her heart so much as skips a beat. And I think back to that passage, I think it's from Woodward and Bernstein's The Brethren, where when Justice Thurgood Marshall was ill, Nixon sent somebody to stand outside his hospital door, and he called him inside and handed him a note. And it was just like two or three words Thurgood Marshall had written on a piece of paper. Said, take this back to the president. And when Nixon got it, he went into a towering rage, probably yelled at Henry Kissinger about the Negroes or something, because that piece of paper said, not fucking yet. Because Nixon was so eager to be rid of Thurgood Marshall. And God, what an embarrassment it is that the second African-American male on the United States Supreme Court is Clarence, pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas. Sincere, conscientious objections? Scott in San Diego says, why is it, Mr. Bob, that when one looks more closely to this excuse of theirs, one always sees that it's somebody, it's always something not about them not doing something, and it's already always somebody about somebody else not doing something? I really mangled that, but I get the idea. I'm thinking it's just another conservative bullshit ruse. You're only thinking that, Scott, because that's what it is. Yes, Irish Dave, it is Michael Richard Pence. So that could also be translated as Mike Pencil Dick. Well played, sir. Well played. Jeremy in Vermont says, sadly, I shop at Walmart. The prices of insulin in the other stores around here are several hundred dollars more for 1 month of supplies as it is at Walmart for 3 months. I don't know why, it just is. And there was a story several weeks ago now where one insulin maker announced that they were going to reduce the price of insulin during the pandemic. And I forget who it was writing said, just imagine. They could have been doing this all along. Yeah, but then the shareholders would have a sad. I know. Poor little shareholders. Poor little pharma CEOs with their noses pressed up against the frosty window panes, looking at us proles inside, eating all of those Alaskan king crab legs. I know. Lengthy note from Billable Rick. Subject line, maggot Wisconsin Supreme Court poised to overturn Secretary of Health's stay-at-home order. You may recall the audio from Patience D. Roggensack. And what you do is you go to the Roggen cul-de-sac, and you get out of the car, and you cut off your Roggen sack. Never mind, old Johnny Carson joke. Billable Rick says, I am gobsmacked by some of the statements made by maggot Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley in oral arguments in a case filed by the Republican-controlled Wisconsin State Legislature against the stay-at-home order issued by Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm, appointed by Democratic Governor Tony Evers. In a fine article discussing this controversy at Slate, Mark Joseph Stern notes that the court's five Republican justices expressed hostility toward the stay-at-home order and appeared to have no compunction about ending social distancing rules for the rest of the state's citizens, even as they conducted their hearing remotely on Zoom. The goddess of irony never ceases her tireless work. GOP lawmakers are contesting Secretary Palm's authority to issue an order that shuttered schools and non-essential businesses while curbing residents' ability to travel or gather in groups. When the levers of power were in GOP hands, the Wisconsin legislature passed a law granting sweeping powers and duties to the secretary during a public health emergency, including the ability to forbid public gatherings in schools, churches, and other places to control outbreaks and epidemics. But now that a Democrat controls the executive branch, Republicans want to strip Palm of her prerogative to exercise these powers. Instead, they insist she must go through an onerous process that includes a mandatory 10-day waiting period. In other words, the Republicans in the state of Wisconsin want to wait 10 days to let people get sick and die, and must also it's in the Constitution, and must also receive legislative input. Under this regime, legislative leaders could use public hearings to delay the order, and a legislative committee could suspend it, forcing the agency to start over. During a pandemic, this procedural obstacle, of course, would effectively give the virus a weeks-long head start over the government, just like Donald Trump gave it nationally. The justices seem inclined to negate the stay-at-home order, not on a state constitutional basis, but rather on general principles of liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Woof. Although the case does not involve the state constitution, Justice Rebecca Bradley framed Palm's order as an egregious restriction on their inherent rights. You know, to make other people sick, inherent rights. Justice Bradley went full-on maggot, comparing Palm's order to the racist executive order mandating the internment of Japanese immigrants and Japanese Americans during World War II, which the Supreme Court notoriously upheld in Korematsu versus United States, and I'll add parenthetically, has never to this day cast into the dustbin of history. Bradley then implied that Palm might force Wisconsinites into internment camps, as in Korematsu, if the court did not step in. Oh, please. Could the secretary, she asked defense counsel, under this broad delegation of legislative power or legislative-like power, order people out of their homes into centers where they're properly socially distanced in order to combat the pandemic? Oh, fuck. Like Clorox Caligula, Justice Bradley also compared the coronavirus to the seasonal flu, telling defense counsel, the logical consequence of your argument, counsel, is that Palm could step in and do this every single flu season, every year, because the flu kills tens of thousands of people in America every year, and that's a communicable disease. The author of the article notes that this isn't the first time Bradley has dismissed the severity of the virus. In March, she opposed an order halting non-criminal jury trials, writing that it was not necessary to protect the public. What in the hell is wrong with the Wisconsin Supreme Court? Oh, of course. The maggot and stupid run strong in those injustices, says Billable Rick. They don't give a good goddamn about liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Liberty's not very obedient. Jeremy in Vermont says, no cowbell for Billable Rick. The email just wasn't long enough. But that gets a cowbell. You people. No, they don't. They don't give a good goddamn about liberty. And freedom is defined as whatever it is that increases their wealth, their power, their access to control. Scott Walker was still governor, they'd probably be shooting people in the streets and Patience Roggensack and Bradley would be furiously writing opinions in the blood of the killed, justifying what he did. Oh, thank you very kindly. Alma's challenge has been finished by Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, Charlene. And that means, and we're $15 further into Tuesday, which is awesome. We're at $279. We're only $79 away from being done with yesterday. That's wonderful. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very much. Billable Rick says, "Nicely played, Jeremy." He's a sporting. He's a good sport. That Billable Rick is. Oh, for pity's sakes, this doesn't bode well. Darlene just sent this along with a one-word message. Great. Top Trump booster and RNC fundraiser to be named Postmaster General. The selection of, this from the Washington Post, the selection of North Carolina businessman Louis DeJoy to run the cash-strapped U.S. Postal Service into the ground. I added into the ground part, the end of the ground part. Would install a staunch ally of President Trump over an independent agency the president has long derided as a loser and likely give Trump more influence in realizing his long-term goal of changing how the Postal Service does business. Postal Service confirmed the move Wednesday evening. You know, at one point in time, Postmaster General, and I'm not sure when it stopped being, but Postmaster General was a critical member of the cabinet. Probably should still be. And I really do like the idea of making the post office an internet service provider. They couldn't do any worse than Frontier. And of letting people bank at the post office. That would be nice. But there's no surprise in this. And the horror and the terror of it all. You know, the French Revolution was referred to as the terror. I think we have a new terror. The terror of it all is we're in early May. That means we've got June, July, August, September, October, November, December, and 20 days of January. 7 months and 20 days. 7 months and 45 days, maybe. In which this gang of miscreants, footpads, cut purses, highwaymen, thugs, can continue to disassemble our country, and we are powerless to stop it. Jack in Shreveport lets us know that down Louisiana Stanway, because they've got a Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards, the House and GA committee is about to hear a measure by the House GOP leader to revoke the governor of Louisiana's ability to enforce his stay-at-home order. Representative Dodie Horton is concerned this measure doesn't go far enough. Now they're discussing whether they should instead support the petition to revoke the governor's emergency declaration entirely. Jack says simply, "Dumb fucks. Dangerous dumb fucks. Trying to kill people." It's an inescapable conclusion. And I'm at wit's end to figure out how you stop it. Because as I've noted so many times before, we're exposed. Every single failure that was possible inside the Constitution of the United States has been laid bare. And the funniest part of it all, not funny at all, is that some people saw it coming. Some of us have more time than others on our hands right now. This would be a lovely time to go and, you know, because you can get it free on the interweb tubes. Go and read Federalist 10. James Madison saw every bit of this coming. And twisted himself into a human pretzel, trying to pretend that it wasn't. but it's here now. And every flaw in the Constitution has had circles and arrows drawn around it, and is being ruthlessly exploited. So in the eat cheese or die state, what was called Japanese internment has morphed into an internment order. Interment, as in burial. Yeah. Postmaster General, Dave reminds us, was often the president's chief political operative, Jim Farley, for example, who famously said after FDR's 1936 reelection, as Maine goes, so goes Vermont. Dave never stops. That's good. Well, they managed to have an election in Iraq because the world is continuing to do world stuff. Iraq's parliament has chosen an American-backed candidate, Mustafa Kadhimi, as prime minister, giving the country its first real government in months, according to the New York Times. That'll work well. It's still a very busy world out there. And just for those of you who were wondering, and a couple of you sent in emails toward the end of the program after my conversation with Parson Brown last night, saying, yes, Bob, yes, you must watch Planet of the Humans. Well, I watched it. I was under the misapprehension that it was a Michael Moore documentary. No, Michael Moore just pumped some money into it as an executive producer. It is... well, let's just put it this way. I watched it start to finish. Had a feeling I knew what I was in for. And I was not wrong. I went to bed in a nihilistic funk, which is not nearly as comfortable as going to bed in one's fuzzy pajamas. It's a grim tale. And I watch with a more jaundiced eye, perhaps, than most. I could see some messaging in there that kind of creeped me out. Because I could see how, you know, I don't think it was the intent of the filmmaker. Because one of the things he did early on by way of trying to establish his environmentalist credibility was to talk about the fact that somewhere along the way he had protested mountaintop removal. And so my pink little ears perked up. But much of the upshot of the argument being put forward was that all the things that we have hailed, and I've done it on this program, wind, solar, as hopeful future replacements for dirty energy, require dirty energy to produce. That great big solar furnace out in the California desert is a shambles now. It never really was able to work without massive amounts of hydrocarbon fuel behind it in the form of natural gas. Solar was pointed out as a non-alternative because the sun doesn't always shine. And because it requires baseload power behind it, and we don't have the battery technology, and we don't have the smart grid 2.0 or whatever it was once referred to. But what the film really does is it goes through all of those issues, and then it turns out what it is it's a documentary that is a jeremiad against biofuels. And I'm okay with that because biofuels are a goddamn nightmare. If there was, I would say in that film, and I guess this is a bit of a review, the greatest amount of value in that film was the work that he did to expose the big greens. And he did a pretty decent job, but there's stuff in there that I guess even he doesn't know. What's his name? Gibbs? There's stuff in there that he doesn't know that I know. And that we who have been battling against mountaintop removal have found out the hard way. So he was stating the obvious when he talked about how thoroughly co-opted and corrupted the Sierra Club is, Natural Resources Defense Council, 350.org. And I didn't have to watch the film to know that. I've got real-time, real-world experience with that. There was footage in there of Michael Bloomberg giving a gajillion dollars to the Sierra Club. What wasn't in there was the representations that had been made to Michael Bloomberg to entice him to give them that money. And that was a bald-faced lie that the Sierra Club had miraculously ended mountaintop removal in Appalachia. They hadn't. They still haven't. Permits are still coming in and being rubber stamped and approved. The blasting is still happening. The poisoning via particulate matter is still floating around in the air. That's how come when this pandemic started, I was more familiar with the idea of particulate toxins than maybe a lot of Americans were. Then again, this is a country that has people who make videos of themselves licking toilet seats for attention on social media. And I kept waiting for something in the way of an answer, and if not an answer, a recommendation. Yeah, sure, they're all these big green organizations are co-opted. That's because they're corporate. And that's because they depend for their existence on people like Michael Bloomberg, no matter how many emails they send out that wind up in your inbox saying, "Save the last gray wolf! And if you send us $15 right now, we will send you a canvas messenger bag, just like the one that John Muir carried into Hetch Hetchy oh so many years ago, except his canvas bag, messenger bag, wasn't sewn by a 9-year-old girl chained to a table in Guangdong Free Trade Province, China." That ain't how they make their money. I mean, if you want a direct analog to the situation, the National Rifle Association does not make its money from people sending in their annual dues. The National Rifle Association has made its gajillions over the years by being subsidized by huge amounts of money from people like Remington and Sturm Ruger, and Glock, and Springfield, and et cetera. The gun manufacturers, the ammo manufacturers. You know, this is the same thing. But I kept waiting for an answer, and again, I remember conversations that I've had on this program with Mike Rozelle, who is literally one of the original founders of Greenpeace. And we talked one night about, do people really understand what we mean when we say, when we talk about a clean energy future? Because in many ways, it's going to look like some of the world's on Firefly. You know, literally going back to horses and buggies, mules, oxen. And hopefully with enough infrastructure left to keep electronic communication alive, sort of the way those worlds look on Firefly. But ultimately, he just says, hey, too many people here. Duh. I didn't not know that. But the problem with saying there are too many people here is you can get real Malthusian, real social Darwinist real quick. Because if there are too many people on this planet, then the obvious answer is to have fewer people on this planet. That may be the obvious answer, but how you achieve that goal, there's no way that isn't absolutely horrifying. And probably criminal. And likely genocidal. So I guess the only answer is to just putter along until we kill ourselves off. And then maybe some of us will, there will be enough of us left that we can meander down to Georgia, to the Georgia fucking Guidestones that were set up by the Rosicrucians, and get the rules for restarting a society. I mean, I've been reading articles about the airline industry and how they may not come back anything like what we expected. I saw another article that says airline tickets may be monumentally more expensive, especially if you don't want to sit crammed up next to somebody breathing and smolicking and LARPing all over you, stuffed into an aircraft like sardines in a tin. So, to be fair, I didn't see much value in the film. And maybe it's because of what I've been doing for so long. There wasn't a lot of new information there. I mean, hell, when they got to the passage about how you make silicon metal, I've known that since I was 5 years old. Because that's what my dad did. 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit in a carbon arc, working around a carbon arc furnace. 8 hours a day. Yeah, Steve, for instance, says population control makes me wonder if things like COVID-19 aren't the Earth fighting back. I think there's a lot of places where the Earth fights back. But COVID-19 is not... I mean, it doesn't even begin to compare with the bubonic plague. A third to a half of the population of Europe and Asia wiped out. This isn't going to do that. It's going to be ugly. There will be disruption. But again, this economy is not in a state of collapse. It's in a state of suspended animation. But I get scared anytime I hear anybody talking about how there's too many people on the planet. Yes, there are. I mean, the concept of carrying capacity is real. But so what? How do we correct that? I don't know, a prophylactic nuclear attack here and there, maybe some neutron bombs. You know, that was the big selling point of the neutron bomb back during the Cold War, is it would kill a shitload of people, but it would leave the buildings intact. And where's the transmission of the necessary knowledge to come up out of the ashes, whatever the case may be? Doesn't exist. We really don't have people who can build a fleet of wooden sailing ships. We don't have enough hemp farms to make the damn rope. So, yeah, I watched it. But in all candor, I didn't get anything out of it except to see people that I've known were not the good guys that they purport to be, and have known that for a really, really long time. Too many people, Jack in Shreveport says, I think I've heard in the past that the birth rate goes down when women have equal political power to men, or maybe more. Ensuring women have that would be a solution that isn't genocidal. Yeah. And part of that metric is that women who have access to reproductive health care have access to contraception and can determine themselves the size of their families. Makes a big difference. China recognized it and tried to do something via the one-child policy, and they're still hustling a documentary about it, I think, on Netflix. And all the religion industry monstrosities threw a hissy about the Chinese one-child policy, which could have cut the Chinese population by half in a generation. But, of course, it went sideways. Because they started, because of cultural preferences for little boys and whatnot, started murdering little girl babies. God damn, how stupid is that? I don't think I've felt been more of a nihilistic funk as I was after watching Planet of the Humans. Since I got done rereading Kurt Vonnegut's Galapagos. Because that novel is Vonnegut at his most, oh, fuck it. Stephen, New York says, you're right, however, even the Earth's actions can't overcome all of our technology. Yeah, not until it crashes. And crash, it eventually will. Stephen, Georgia Stan says the movie, I wasn't hatched, but collectively, society needs to rethink this fascination of creating replicas of themselves. We need to be pragmatic, not the Duggars. Yeah. Quiverful for Jesus. Post office, Lady B says, exactly, Bob. As soon as you read that, I thought they're doing this shit on purpose. They aren't even trying to hide it anymore. It's blatant, it's obvious, it's bold, and it's utterly terrifying. P.S. I really enjoy it when you say thank you. You seem so touched and humbled by it. It's just incredible how grateful you are. P.P.S. I might be high as I'm writing this. Hooray for cleaning empty buildings. If you might be high, that might be a good thing. And I am grateful because I've known every year, every day of this broadcast that this is a community effort, and that every effort to keep this community afloat represents a sacrifice on some level. And for me to be anything but deeply grateful, well, I can't conceive it. I mentioned the NRA. Darlene sent along a little piece of happy news from over at Raw Story. Revealed, court filings show the NRA is in a shambles, and Wayne the Peter hopes his lawyer can keep him out of jail. Um, Darlene says this article goes in depth on how Lapeter is a grifter pansy money whore. Ollie started questioning, and now Ollie is out. The NRA is in serious trouble, but that's the best news we'll hear all day. They were published in full, these documents, by NRA Watch. And you can find it over at Raw Story. Revealed, court filings show the NRA is in shambles. And Wayne LaPierre, Wayne the Peter, hopes his lawyer can keep him out of jail. Maybe he'll be wrong. Yeah, and Randy points something out. Randy and PA, as we head out the door, says, I've been contacted by petition campaigns urging people to contact their representatives regarding municipalities shutting off city water services to citizen customers for reasons of non-payment unconscionable. Yeah, it is. And one of the things coming out of this is that if we are to survive, we've got to figure out a way to wrest power away from these people all over the country and craft solutions that are manifestly more humane. And so that means one of the mindset changes that has to take place is that we have to stop lying to ourselves and saying, well, you know, okay, but the South's just a bunch of assholes. But, you know, California and Washington and Oregon and New York and Massachusetts and New England, they're all cool. Fuck the South. Because it's kind of like something that Booker T. Washington said to the Atlanta Exposition in the late 1890s, talking about integration of freedmen into American society and culture. He said, you can either integrate the freed black man, or the freed black man can be a millstone around your neck for the rest of your born days and well into the future. I'm paraphrasing. Well, the same thing goes to the white governments of the southern states. It's part of the reason we let them be the takers that they are. It is part of the reason, and when I say we let them, I'm in a taker state too. But part of the reason that we give more money to these states than they pay in is because it's predicated on the idea that maybe we can finally make them be better states, make them be more responsive governments. So far, well, I think it worked out a little bit better under the ideas of the New South. But, oh dear, not right now. And so we need a political philosophy. Well, once upon a time, it was referred to as Howard Dean's 50-state strategy, where you contest this right-wing hatefulness in every state. Where you don't say, well, you know, Mississippi's always going to be that way. The poor you have always with you. Fuck it. And I don't necessarily know how you do that. But I got a feeling that as we watch the spikes shoot into the stratosphere in these reopening maggot states, that we might just come to the realization that we no longer have any choice. And we have to fix them, too. So that's the program for this evening. Thanks to all of you who responded to Alma's We're All in This Together challenge. And we've got, 279 would finish the evening. And we'll just see what happens with the overnight crew. And come back for Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow. Remember, coming up at 9 o'clock on the HeadOn.live stream and on the Horns. Well, I don't know if it's going to be on the Horns TuneIn stream. I'll have to leave that to Brother Deacon Asa. But the Mike Malloy Show, coming your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going with your kind contributions, your subscriptions, PayPal, Patreon. Thank you. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, however you so choose to do so. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And yes, it will. Malloy will be on both the Horns Tune In and on HeadOn.live. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, again. Listen, y'all, stay safe, wash your hands, don't touch your face. Wear a mask, not for yourself, but for others. And if you see a maggot, get as far away from them as you can, as though they were the plague, because they are. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.